Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around for a while tonight. Things are really, I mean seriously, getting crazy. As far as the liberal media is concerned, have you heard the latest? CNN is hiring Tony Snow. Richard Mellon Scaife's newspaper in Pittsburgh is endorsing Hillary Rodham Clinton, which is one of the few states in the, or one of the few newspapers in the state of Pennsylvania to do so. You all know that William Kristol was a neocon, right-wing Likudnik, was hired by the New York Times to be a columnist. The liberal media, and here we are, the liberal media. We have all sorts of ground to cover tonight, plus a couple of quotes from insane John McCain from yesterday's interview with George, I should say, Judas Stephanopoulos on This Week. But first, from the religion desk, this is from Jonesville, South Carolina. Jonesville, South Carolina. A sign in front of a church there is causing some, controversy. The reverend there is Roger Bird. He's with the Jonesville Church of God, and he put up a sign in the church's marquee up front which reads, Obama, Osama, Hum, are they brothers? Now, the Hum, I think it's a typical cracker way of spelling, You remember that sign about morons that the redneck was holding up and he had it spelled M-O-R-A-N-S? Well, I think that this reverend is trying to spell hmm, so he spells it H-U-M-M. But the sign then reads, Obama, Osama, are they brothers? Pastor Bird says the sign is not meant to be racial or political, but rather to make people think. Pastor Bird says, well, you know, his name is so close to Osama, I have a feeling he might be Islamic, and therefore he doesn't recognize Christ. Barack, of course, has for 30 years attended the Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago. You wonder if this reverend has not heard of Jeremiah Wright and all of that controversy. Eugenia Foster, who lives in Jonesville, is offended by the church sign. Ms. Foster said, I'm embarrassed and hurt. I'm surprised a small town like Jonesville still has this separation. It is racial and it is hatred. Pastor Bird told News Channel 7 that he would ask his congregation to vote on whether to keep the sign. They voted unanimously to keep the sign up Sunday night. Oh, P.S. Jonesville Church of God does not have any African-American members. Obama, Osama, are they brothers? Unbelievable. Well, no, I'm not trying to say anything racial or political. We're a house of the Lord. In Florida now has more than 100 specialized license plates. You can get just about anything on your license plate. You know, we support manatees. We hope University of Florida whips Georgia's ass. You can get, there's 100 of them. Challenger, Space Shuttle, Panthers, football teams. Well, there's a new one. The Republican-controlled legislature there is trying to add one. It's a colorful license plate that has the words, I believe. on the plates. Now, the words, I believe, are set among a, according to this, resplendent sunrise and the image of a cross in front of a stained glass window. What if you're a Jew or a Muslim or a Wiccan or believe in chairs or something? You know, I believe by God, and there's a cross to prove it. The license plate is being seen by some critics as promoting a religious Well, it could be promoting a religious message. There's a cross of our Lord and Savior Christ in the stained glass window, and I believe. You know, they said the same thing when back in 1999 when Florida lawmakers approved the Choose Life tag, which I don't know. It just seems to me that that license tag would have been just ironic and grotesque to a state highway patrolman who came upon a multiple fatality accident on in one of Florida's highways, and there was that Choose Life tag, huh? Don't you think? Senator Mike Fasano, a new Paul Ritchie Republican, is sponsoring a measure that will create four different plates, including the I Believe tag, as well as a lighthouse tag, and a In God We Trust tag. He said he saw no problem with letting motorists decide if they want to pay the extra $25 to buy a special tag. Senator Fasano said that's the option of every driver who owns a vehicle. They can decide if they want to have a license plate with a cross in front of a stained glass window. It's not different from choosing a Choose Life license plate or a Manatee license plate or a Florida State University or University of Florida license plate. Why has everybody got their bloomers in a wad? I'm just suggesting. I believe. God damn it, what's the problem with that? So we got a cross up there. What do you want? Star David? No, I don't think so. Them Jews down in Miami can get their own thing going, but they ain't going to piggyback on my bill. No! Howard Simon, the director of the ACLU of Florida, said the possibility of a state-sanctioned license plate with a cross should prompt Florida lawmakers to kind of, you know, rethink the whole system of these prestige tags, or whatever they're called. Mr. Simon said, maybe at this point the legislature should begin rethinking whether a message on a state-manufactured license plate like I Support Panthers or I'm a Christian might be better on a bumper sticker? Oh, yeah, the extra money earned from the sale of the I Believe license plates would go to an Orlando-based nonprofit called Faith in Teaching. It says on its website that money from the plates would be used for grants to, quote, continue faith-based education for the youth of Florida, end quote. Mr. Simon, the ACLU executive director for Florida, says he doesn't think having the state collect money for this religious organization should particularly be a good idea. Oh, my God. What is it? How's come the Jews never come up with this kind of stuff? Think about that for a minute. The Jews just kind of sit back and just kind of shake their heads, I guess. Do you ever hear, you ever turn on your TV and see a bunch of Jews in a synagogue exhorting you to send in 1995 and they'll send you a prayer cloth that the rabbi has blessed or something? Have you ever seen that? Huh? No, I'm not talking about Israelis. Come on, I'm talking about Jews. Have you ever seen a Muslim get on television and say, well, what we have here today for your love offering of $100 is a little bit of dirt from Mecca. And it's in this specially made little jar, and you send in $100 love offering, and Imam Abdullah will send you. No, you don't see that, do you? You never see, do you ever see any Sikhs on television or any Hindus? Oh, send in money and we will send you this book of Bhagavad Gita. You don't see that. You ever see any Buddhists on television saying, send us money, we will chant No, you don't. What do you see? Who is the big pimp, hustler, the one who pimps religion worse than anyone else? The one who's turned God into a commodity? That's right! We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Subliminable messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
It's about 21 past the hour. Kurt Minneapolis writes in that Barack, this preacher in South Carolina who says Osama, Obama, they sound alike. Yeah, they probably do to you, you weasel. But why not go? Why didn't this preacher understand that Obama's first name is Barack, which is the same as the second to the last prime minister of Israel? All these fundamentalist Christian preachers just love the Jews, don't they? Just love them. They love them until the time comes when they're going to have to cut their throats. That's how they love them. Oh, don't get started. So it's official now. A former White House press secretary and mega liar, Tony Snow, will join CNN as a, wait for it, conservative commentator. Beginning today, I guess it began today, CNN President John Klein announced that Snow, a longtime political observer with a longstanding news background, will continue. Will contribute to CNN as the network continues to broadcast winning political coverage. The liberal media, huh? How about this, folks? Josh Epstein blogging at thejoshblog.com, the Joshua blog, says CNN, exclamation point, Tony Snow, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. And then Josh writes, pathological liar, Tony Snow, are the people up in the big offices brain dead? Leaving aside the fact that this guy wouldn't know how to tell the truth of his life depended on it, you're hiring a person from the worst administration in our nation's history whose expertise technically qualifies him as a co-defendant. Oh, my God. So this is how CNN, you see, is going to beat Fox. They're going to hire all these pissants and whores from Fox News Channel. What's next? Rush Limbaugh? Oh, that's right. He was a guest commentator on Katie Couric's program, CBS Evening News, wasn't he?
Now, is this what Tony Snow meant when he said he needed to leave the White House to go make more money, I guess, before he meets his maker?
This is it. This is where he makes more money. Oh, they're probably, I can probably guess that they're paying him about $750 a year and probably gave him a two-year contract or death by cancer, whichever comes first.
I have to admit, that one really shocked me. Of all the legitimate reasons Tony Snow could have had to leave and could have told, you know, I'm not feeling well, I'd like to spend some time with my family, this has been very stressful, it's taking its toll. No, he says, you know, I need some money. I want to go make more money, and that's what I'm going to do.
Barry writes in, did you ever notice the similarity between Osama and Alabama? That whole goddamn state's full of terrorists, huh? Osama, Alabama. No, wait a minute. Osama, Alabama. Moving right along. When we last left ABC News, they had reported that Bush's most senior advisors, last week we talked about this, approved the use of harsh interrogation tactics, which means torture. And days later, Bush, who felt like he was not getting credit, confirmed to ABC that he approved of the tactic. Now, I'm a decider. I make decisions. The story was that the senior advisors had tried to wall off Bush, and Bush didn't like that because, you know, he's a pimp. He's an absolute torture pimp, and he wanted to make sure he got credit for his pimping. Well, in a forthcoming book, an international law professor from the UK, Philippe Sands, further documents how the most extreme torture techniques came directly from the White House and the Pentagon. Professor Sands reveals that Alberto Gonzalez, David Addington, and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld's lawyer, Jim Haynes, along with Rumsfeld, apparently traveled to Guantanamo in 2002, witnessed interrogations, quote, and sent approval back to Washington. Professor Sands says the driving individual was Mr. Addington. And then there's a quote from the book that says there was an extraordinary meeting held in September 2002, just before the techniques were to go up the chain of command, so to speak. Gonzalez, Addington, and Haynes descended on Guantanamo, met with the combatant commander there, Mike Dunleavy, watched some, quote, interrogations, and as I was told by Dunleavy and his lawyer, Diane Beaver, basically sent out the signal to, quote, do whatever needs to be done. End quote. I believe in miracles. Where you from? You sexy thing. Sexy thing, you. I believe in miracles. Since you came along, you sexy thing. All right, it's almost 25 before the hour. So, Addington, Gonzalez, and a whole list of insiders of the Bush crime family went to Guantanamo to watch a torture. That's according to a new book by British international law professor Philippe Sands. Sands also explained how General Richard Myers, who was then the Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman, was cut out of the loop by Rumsfeld. Remember, we talked about this last week, too. Rumsfeld said that he'd been assured that any interrogation methods would be approved in the Army Field Manual. None of this stuff was, of course. Myers did not know the administration decided to flush the Geneva Conventions down the toilet. Lawrence Wilkerson, who's former chief of staff to Colin Powell, explained the implications of what's in this book. He says, Haynes, Feith, you, Bybee, Gonzalez, and at the apex, Addington, should never travel outside the U.S. except perhaps to Saudi Arabia and Israel. They broke the law. They violated their professional ethical code. In the future, some government may build the case necessary to prosecute them in a foreign court or in an international court. I certainly hope that happens, Truth Seeker. I certainly hope that that happens. These people have these Americans have decided that the law is for bumpkins and jerks and dumbasses. Who was it that said early in their criminal enterprise We create reality as we go along, and when you figure out the reality we've created a new one, as though somehow they are creating universes all their own. And to a certain extent, that's very true, they have. But they need to be tried. They need to be put on trial for what they've done, just like we did to the German High Command and the Japanese High Command after World War II. What these people have done in the Bush crime family is, I know. Yeah, like that's going to happen. Well, let's move over to the Pope then. Ray McGovern, whom a lot of you are familiar with, he's on the steering group of veterans, of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. He's a former CIA person, as far as I'm concerned, one of the real American heroes that we have. He, writing at Consortium News, he asked Pope Benedict, or he mentions that Benedict arrived in the U.S. last week against a really, really incredibly macabre backdrop featuring reports of torture by the highest people in our government, execution being sanctioned by a giggling fat Tony Scalia, who also happens to be a Catholic, on the Supreme Court, and the further funding of a war by a leading Catholic in the House, Nancy Pelosi. All these Catholics in the U.S. government, in various branches of the government, enabling or committing or perpetrating acts that the Catholic Church has come out foursquare against. Of course, the Pope decided not to notice any of this stuff. Now, starting with torture, the reporting by ABC from inside sources that shows Bush's most senior aides, including Cheney, Powell, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, Rice, and Tenet, meeting dozens of times in the White House to sort out the most efficient mix of torture techniques. Now we find out that some of these filthy bastards, these Nazi bastards, went down to watch. Did they get naked and play with themselves while they watched? What kind of torture porn are these people involved in? And when, as Ray McGovern reports, when initially ABC attempted to insulate Bush from the sordid activity, he abruptly bragged that he knew all about it and approved. That comment by Bush and the so-called action memorandum Bush signed on February 7, 2002, dispels any lingering doubt regarding his personal responsibility for authorizing torture. Do you realize there's a war criminal? I know a lot of you have been talking about this for a couple of years now, but there's an honest-to-Christ war criminal running the United States in much the same way, subsequent to their adventures, we declared the military and government leaders of Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, and fascist Japan as war criminals also. And we have them. Who's going to put our war criminals on trial? Who's going to do that, huh? Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court, with the majority of the judges on the court, who are Catholic, were openly deliberating on whether 1 gram or two, perhaps three of this or that chemical would be the preferred way to execute people. And as Ray McGovern reports, always colorful, prominent Catholic layman Antonin Scalia complained impatiently, quote, where's it say in the Constitution that executions have to be painless? End quote. Jesus Christ. Somebody ought to have a long talk with Scalia. Maybe the Pope? Do you think that would help? Of course, he was educated by the Jesuits, which right away means he's a psychopath, a total psychopath. Scalia, McGovern reports, did not seem at all concerned that the Pope might remind him and his Catholic colleagues about the Church's teaching on capital punishment, which is the cases in which the execution of the offender is an absolute necessity are very rare, if not practically non-existent. That's from Evangelium Vitae, number 56. How about war? Ray McGovern says, can the Pope possibly be so suffused with his particular brand of theology that he is oblivious to what happened when he was young man during the Third Reich? Huh? Is it possible that papal advisors forgot to tell him that the post-World War II Nuremberg Tribunal described an unprovoked war of aggression of the kind that the Third Reich and George W. Bush launched as, quote, the supreme international crime, differing from other war crimes only in that it contains the accumulated evil of the whole, end quote. Did nobody sit Pope Benedict down and tell him that? Could they have failed, McGovern writes, to tell the Pope he would be hobnobbing on his visit to the U.S. with war criminals, torturers, and the enabling cowards in Congress who refused to remove them from office? McGovern is Catholic, and he writes, for this Catholic, it was a profoundly sad spectacle. Profoundly sad. And McGovern adds, not since World War II, when the Reich's bishops swore personal oaths of allegiance to Hitler, as did the German Supreme Court and army generals, not since then have the papacy and the bishops acted in such a fawning, unchristlike way as they did when they came here. And McGovern reminds us, with very few exceptions, the bishops in Germany, Catholic and Evangelical Lutherans, collaborated with the Nazis. So you would think, wouldn't you, that Cardinal Ratzinger or Pope Pius or Benedict, whatever his title is, would have a working knowledge, since he was a member of Hitler Youth. He would have a working knowledge of this not-so-long-ago history, the Nuremberg war trials, and what the charges were, and what the convictions were, and how the cases were worked through this International War Crimes Tribunal. In 1948, in the shadow of that monstrous world war, the French author-philosopher Albert Camus accepted an invitation from the Dominican monastery of La Tour Maubourg. The Dominicans wanted to know what an unbeliever, Camus, thought about Christians in the light of their behavior during the 30s and 40s. Camus' words seem so terribly relevant today that it is difficult to trim them. Here they are. Quote, for a long time during those frightful years, I waited for a great voice to speak up in Rome. I, an unbeliever? Precisely, for I knew that the spirit would be lost if it did not utter a cry of condemnation. It has been explained to me since that the condemnation was indeed voiced, but that it was in the style of the encyclicals, which is not all that clear. The condemnation was voiced, and it was not understood. Who could fail to feel where the true condemnation lies in this case? What the world expects of Christians is that Christians should speak out loud and clear, and that they should voice their condemnation in such a way that never a doubt, never the slightest doubt, could rise in the heart of the simplest man. End quote.
Fear of state religion, that's not what we're going for. We don't want for one governmental religion. Government will never, you know, say this is the religion. We're free from society for religion.
It's about 10 before the hour. Quoting from Ray McGovern's piece at consortium.com today. About how the Pope I have to say that, you know, I have a lot of friends, consortiumnews.com, a lot of friends who are Catholic. And as a kid growing up, anytime you mentioned Pius XII's name or the popes that succeeded him, you know, the Catholic kids that I knew would just get all squirrely. They really did. You know, that was the Holy Father. That was God's representative on earth. And when a pope comes to the United States, you know, I usually pay very close attention to whatever video is available, just to see the religious fervor, the ecstasy that flows through people. And on the one hand, it's you know, kind of interesting to see, maybe even nice. On the other hand, it just scares the hell out of me. Not the hell in a theological sense, but you know what I mean. To see people that enraptured by superstition or myth, to me, superstition, myth. To them, it's the core of their being. On some level, it's part of the core of their being. But this pope comes here and, in the most oblique way possible, addresses child rape that's been going on, not just here, but around the world by Catholic priests for the past half century. That's just, you know, it's probably been going on for 2,000 years, but the child rape and the violation of kids, and he addresses it in the smarmy kind of, oh, well, let's pray for the victims, rather than saying, bring me these sons of bitches who violated the residents of heaven, and I will cut their heads off. Or worse, I will excommunicate them. But of course, there's none of that. No, bring me four or five of the victims, and we'll sit around and pray. That'll help. So the Pope, who had every chance to condemn the war criminals running the United States, and didn't say a word. Nothing. Nothing. As McGovern writes, think back to last week and all the prominent Catholics who flocked to see the Pope, many of them officials with considerable influence in the judiciary and the legislature, with some important players in the executive branch as well. They were there with their families, the five Catholic Supreme Court justices, fresh from detailed deliberations on how best to implement state-sponsored killings, executions that are banned by virtually every civilized country. Justice Scalia audibly salivated over how much noxious chemical should be shot into the veins of a, quote, condemned, end quote, and how quickly. For those with strong stomachs, C-SPAN captured the proceedings. In the House, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, erstwhile doyen of the Archdiocese of Baltimore and now San Francisco, and Minority Leader John Boehner, Ohio, Catholics both, are about to allocate another $100 billion to death and destruction in Iraq and Afghanistan. For the most reprehensibly crass of political purposes, the coming election. And Pelosi also has been unusually candid in admitting that it is electoral politics, pure and simple, that explain her resistance to holding Bush and Cheney accountable for high crimes and misdemeanors. If, as widely expected, the war funding goes through, several hundred more American troops will die before some common sense can be injected into U.S. policy, not to mention how many Iraqis. Iraq is a shambles. 2 million Iraqis have fled abroad. Another 2 million are internal refugees. Am I the only one who finds macabre the raging debate as to whether the attack and occupation of Iraq has resulted in 1 million dead or only 300,000 Iraqis dead? Apparently the Pope did not have any opinion on the Iraq war. But surely the Pope would speak out against the kind of torture for which our country has become famous. Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, CIA, black sites. The more so since Jesus of Nazareth was tortured to death. But the Pope chose silence, which presumably came as welcome relief to four-star torturer's apprentice General Michael Hayden, now head of the CIA. The White House has made it clear that Hayden is ready to instruct his torturers to waterboard again. Having demonstrated his allegiance to the president, General Hayden was picked to head the CIA. The general likes to brag about his moral training and Catholic credentials. At his nomination hearing, he noted that he was the beneficiary of 18 years of Catholic education. Man. What do you think about this, truth seekers? What do you think? Well, as, who just sent me this? Kate Scalia. Isn't Scalia part of Opus Dei that believes in the mortification of the flesh? So what is a little pain to a criminal when our Lord and Savior Jesus suffered and died on the cross? Oh, man. And you know what? What is really bizarre is a lot of people listen to this program, and I know because I get the emails. You know, you blame the Jews for everything, right? The Jews in our political system. Well, they're, you know, they're all Israeli agents. They all have dual citizenship. Yeah. Does it ever occur to you that it's really the Christian Catholics who are taking this country into the bowels of hell? Welcome back. It's almost 7 past the hour. Have I done enough religion bashing this evening? I still can't get over the fact that the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, whose owner and publisher is billionaire right-wing nutcase Richard Mellon Scaife, yesterday endorsed Hillary Rodham Clinton for the presidency. Scaife, as you know by now, personally funded so many of the so-called investigations and the muckraking that went on against Clinton and led to his impeachment in 1998. In its endorsement, the editors of the Tribune Review said Barack Obama is too inexperienced to be president. The paper said, quote, in sharp contrast, Clinton is far more experienced in government as an engaged first lady to a governor and a president, and as a second-term senator in her own right, end quote. Now, Hillary Clinton referred to Richard Mellon Scaife and the rest of these vermin as part of, remember, the vast right-wing conspiracy? You know, why doesn't Hillary Clinton hold a press conference and say, you know, Richard Mellon Scaife and the Pittsburgh Tribune Review can kiss my grits? I don't want their endorsement. She's being endorsed by right-wing vermin who, incidentally, tried to destroy her husband, her daughter, and her. What the hell is going on? The Republicans have always whined that if they had a chance to control all three branches of government, to actually run this country, everything would be great. How many times have you heard that, huh? The left-wing media was stopping them, and the communists in the military or in the government or in the State Department. There was always something. And then they got a chance to do it. What's been the result here, truth seekers? Huh? As the nation says, nothing but obvious failures have been the result. A crashing economy, a rotting infrastructure, a failed war, a less safe world. More Americans saying their nation is on the wrong track than any time since pollsters started measuring. But, in the face of all this, the conservative movement has kept on trying to do the only thing it knows how to do. Sell conservatism! Blah! The conservative era is over. I don't know what we're going to get in place of it. Maybe pure, unbridled fascism. I don't know. But given a chance, this is why conservatism is such a failed form of government. Our theory of government, and why would anybody in the United States of America vote for it any longer? I mean, if you really don't want the queers to get married, then work your ass off to get your state constitution amended to that fact. But vote Democrat. If you really want to stop a woman having a right to privacy, then lobby the Supreme Court of the United States the best you can. Through the court system, get a case started in federal court, but in the meantime, vote Democrat. It's crazy. Why would anyone in this country vote for McCain or any Republican or Hillary Clinton? She's a Republican. Don't you all get that? Jesus. All the talk, you know, every year, every election cycle, all the candidates have to reveal their tax returns. I'm yet to understand why that is. I'm sure there's a good sound reason for doing that, to give us the voters, quote, all 46% of us, a chance to nose around and say, oh, really? How much do they put on charity? Son of a bitch, only 10%? Cheap ass. Oh, well, how much did you put? Oh, well, I'm not running for president, so I'm not going to tell what I did. Or to make sure they're not getting paid off by, some commie or some, not commie anymore, that's dead, some Islamo-fascist. But Media Matters says, you know, it might be helpful to bring our attention to the media's failure to factor in Cindy McCain's income when comparing Senator John McCain's income with that of the other presidential candidates and their spouses. Do you remember, when was it last week when all this was revealed? Clinton's had a net worth of a fortune of $100 million. That's what they earned last year? Is that what that was? $100 million they earned? Barack Obama is in the millions. McCain had like $500,000. Come on, guys. Come on, stop. Numerous media outlets have reported that McCain's campaign justified refusing to release his wife's tax returns by citing John Kerry's wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, as a precedent. But in several cases, those media outlets did not report that, in contrast with Cindy McCain, Teresa Hines did release that part of her income tax return that showed total income, which enabled the New York Times back then to analyze how she benefited from the Bush tax cuts. So why not do Cindy McCain? She's reportedly worth $100 million. So what are they trying to hide? Well, you know, what is it? What are you trying to hide? If you don't have nothing to hide, bring it out. On today, a couple days ago, Tim Russert, Andrea Mitchell, and Matt Lauer were talking about the Clinton's tax returns, but they didn't mention McCain's. They discussed Bill and Hillary's tax returns, speculating about, in Lauer's words, the actual impact the returns will have on those so-called blue-collar workers that are so much part of her base. But they didn't mention that McCain's return showed his little paltry earnings, but had nothing to do with his net worth as a family. Nor did they speculate as to what impact McCain's family wealth would have on his ability to connect with blue-collar workers. Doesn't that seem like an antiquated term these days? Blue-collar workers here in America. You know, the blue-collar workers. Oh. Well. And one last thing here. I want to do some sound from McCain. We'll do that when we come back. But this kind of ties in. There's been a lot of talk about Barack Obama's pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, and the relationship that Reverend Wright had with Nation of Islam leader Minister Louis Farrakhan. And since Obama is connected to Wright, then obviously, one degree of separation, Obama is connected to Louis Farrakhan, right? And in the ABC debate the other night, that was such it should have been flushed after the first 5 minutes, Clinton again brought up Reverend Wright's association with Farrakhan. You see what they're trying to do to Barack Obama. And in the previous debate on MSNBC, Clinton called on Obama to repudiate and denounce Farrakhan's unsolicited praise of Obama. But what about Governor Ed Rendell, the governor of Pennsylvania? As the mayor of Philadelphia, about 11 years ago, Rendell, who is Jewish, and you can see the video if you go to... I guess you can go to YouTube. You can find it. Governor Rendell and Louis Farrakhan. They're on a stage together. This is when Rendell, who is Jewish, and Farrakhan, who called Judaism was it Farrakhan who called it a gutter religion? All that horrible stuff that was going on between Farrakhan and the Jews. But there's Rendell and Farrakhan on the same stage, and Rendell is praising Farrakhan and praising one of the... Black Muslims who wound up on city council as Rendell was the mayor. Why don't they talk about Ed Rendell's association with Farrakhan? Why is that not a discussion?
Radio right from the left. It's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Jay writes in regarding the Pope's visit Haiti. You know, that Western Hemispheric country where they eat mud cakes. Remember when you were a kid, you made mud pies? Jay writes, Mike, do you wonder why the Pope did not mention the situation in Haiti, a predominantly Catholic nation? Haitians have resorted to eating mud cakes because of the U.S. free market enterprises. The Haitian farmers have closed shop thanks to cheap subsidized rice imported by the U.S. And let's not mention the IMF debts forced on this country and other African countries, some of which are Catholic. Guess the Pope couldn't make the trip to Haiti. World's power brokers are here. Yeah, well, the church has always, as it wallows in its wealth and splendor and ritual and rings and jewels and mitres and canes and incense and robes and ermine, and it has always advised the faithful of the church to just suck it up because their reward comes upon death. If they've been good Catholics and have contributed part of their mud cakes to the local parish priest, so he has something to eat too, I guess. And forget liberation theology. Any priest who still preaches that is going to wind up in a mass grave in Colombia or El Salvador someplace, right? So why should the Pope go visit the Haitians? Bill in Las Vegas writes, Mike, saying Obama sounds like Osama as a reason not to vote for him, since he might be Islamic, is the pot calling the kettle black. After all, these right-wing fundy whack jobs seem to forget that McCain means son of Cain, the son of Adam and Eve who killed his brother, and whose name is the origin of the word cannibal, and is said to have given rise to the vampire legend. Let them chew on that one for a while. McCain, son of Cain. Oh, God. All right, now y'all are getting way, way too over the top for this stupid little church in Jonesville, South Carolina. Speaking of McCain, we got time to do a couple of these? All right, let's do this first one. This is McCain being interviewed by Judas Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week yesterday. At least he didn't ask McCain about the virtues of flag pins. Instead, he led with a question, Judas did, about McCain's anger issues. Boy George asked, well, Senator, let's begin with the headlines this morning. Washington Post this morning, huge front page story. John McCain, a question of temperament. They talk to a lot of your former colleagues and associates about your temper. Many say it's not a problem anymore. Others say you've got it under control. But look at what a former colleague of yours, Senator Bob Smith of New Hampshire, said. He said, John McCain's temper would place this country at risk in international affairs and the world perhaps in danger. In my mind, it should disqualify him. Now, this guy's a Republican, Senator. You served with him.
I mean, look, I am very happy to be a passionate man. I love this country. I love what we stand for and believe in, and many times I deal passionately when I find things that are not in the best interest of the American people.
Yeah,
and so 25 years ago, 15 years ago, that's fine. And those stories are either totally untrue or grossly exaggerated.
Now, Senator, the same could be said of your attacks on Obama about things that happened when he was 8. Or missing flag pins, or misuse of his bitter comments, and on, but that doesn't stop you or your surrogates or boy George from these nonsensical attacks, does it, Senator? Look, 20, 25 years ago, yeah, I would have cut your goddamn head off, George, just for answering me the question. I would have leaped across the desk here, got my hands around your neck, and held on tight until your eyeballs popped out on your Greek cheeks. How about that? But not anymore! No, I don't get pissed off like that anymore. No, you little bastard. You little punk. Wait till this interview's over. I'll show you a thing or two about anger. You got you. We have one more. No time to do this right now? Okay. Another one from Boy George and Insane McCain. You could just hear it in his voice, couldn't you? In McCain's voice. Ha ha ha, you asked me about anger? Oh, you did good. Okay, all right, okay. All right. 25 years ago, my friend, maybe. My friend, but not now. Now, all right, 15 years ago, my friend. I will get you.
I've seen him angry, and the most frightening thing about it is not how he looks like a little Mexican jumping bean hopping up and down, but it's how that little white thing, that homunculus on his face, it never changes color. It's blanched out. He's just hopping around like a little piece of water on a skillet, and it's still Snow White.
I like the Mexican jumping bean image.
Well, he's so tiny.
We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
So the mood of the country is certainly different from what it was on September the 10th, but I find the mood of the country to be incredibly refreshing.
All night, hearing voices telling me that 25 before the hour, back to McCain and Judas Stephanopoulos yesterday on This Week, ABC, that network that just really tries to enlighten the American electorate with all sorts of incisive questioning by their anchor people. Eventually, as you can imagine, the real Obama smearing began as Boy George asked the oh-so-pertinent question about Barack's tenuous connection to former 60s anti-war activist William Ayers. McCain talks about this man as if he belongs to the FBI or on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, when in reality, this guy is now a professor, University of Chicago, was never convicted of anything. But that's beside the point, because it's not like he and Barack were old fishing buddies or something, or, you know, co-bombers. Ayers happened to do a fundraiser when Obama was seeking re-election to the Illinois Senate and contributed $200. Wouldn't you love to dig into McCain's past and see what neocon nightmares he has in his long 70-plus year history? Anyway, here's Boy George. Here he goes. He asked Senator McCain, quote, "Your allies are signaling that patriotism is going to be an issue this fall." Here's Karl Rove in Gentleman's Quarterly magazine. He says, quote, "There are Democrats, particularly blue-collar Democrats, who defect to McCain because they see McCain as a patriotic figure, and they see Obama as an elitist who's looking down his nose at them, which he is. Do you have any doubt that Barack Obama shares your sense of patriotism, Senator?"
I'm sure he's very patriotic, but his relationship with Mr. Ayers is open to question.
Why?
And that because if you're going to associate and have as a friend and serve on a board and have a guy kick off your campaign that says he's unrepentant, that he wished he'd bombed more. I had a reconciliation with the anti-war movement. One of the great experiences of my life was to get to know and love David Ifshin. I had a reconciliation with the Vietnamese when we normalized relations. But how can you countenance someone who was engaged in bombings which could have or did kill innocent people?
Senator Obama says he was 8 years old when that was happening.
But he became friends with him and spent time with him while the guy was unrepentant over his activities as a member of a terrorist organization, the Weatherman. That, in my view, is really... borders on outrage.
He also pointed out that he and Mr. Ayers have a very loose relationship. They live in the same neighborhood. There was an organizing meeting many, many years ago, he says, in his house, and he says, frankly, I don't agree with these comments that Mr. Ayers made.
Doesn't agree with them. Does he condemn them? Would he condemn someone who says that they're unrepentant and wish that they had bombed more?
But Ayers never bombed anything, you dumb old bastard, you. What are you talking about? Did the Weatherman faction of SDS do bombing? Yes. Was it a terrorist organization? Don't forget, John, one man's terrorist organization is another man's freedom fighter. Let me remind you, let's see, Jefferson, Thomas, was he a terrorist, you old fart? Of course he was. The original Minutemen, the real Minutemen in the colonies, were they terrorists? You goddamn right they were, John. Hey, John, were you a terrorist when you bombed civilians in North Vietnam? Yes, John, you were a terrorist. You murdered only your God knows how many people, you old son of a bitch. And you sit there and talk about William Ayers bombing and killing people when he did nothing of the sort. Look in the mirror, McCain! You are the terrorist. You! If you're going to associate and have a friend and serve on a board and have a guy kick off your campaign that says he's unrepentant, are you repentant? You say you made your peace with the Vietnamese. Did you really? Did you go around to all the families that may have had their children or their husbands or their moms or the old people murdered because you dropped napalm on them or bombs? Did you go around to them, McCain, and say, hey, sorry, war is hell? Did you? A terrorist? Okay. Terrorist. From we're just about ready to come to you. Oh, well, I've got to get to this first. There's this thing that the New York Times had on the front page. At TVNewsLies.org, Reg has the thing, TV News Pimping for the Pentagon. I mean, this is getting so bad, isn't it? Not that we didn't know every time those generals showed up out there, but on television. But Reg says, is it still a conspiracy theory when the entire plot is exposed on the front page of New York Times, Sunday New York Times? Today's story, yesterday's story, blows the lid off the myth that television is in any way fair and balanced, in any way trustworthy, and in any way real news. Most Americans will never see the New York Times story because the TV news networks will not expose their own lies on their own programs. Just imagine CNN or Fox or NBC or ABC or CBS featuring this headline. Behind military analysts, the Pentagon's hidden hand, courting officers tied to military contractors. Records and interviews show how the Bush administration has used its control over access and information in an effort to transform the analysts into a kind of media Trojan horse, an instrument intended to shape terrorism coverage from inside the major TV and radio networks. No, of course you won't. But as Reg writes, excuse me, if you didn't see it on the Times, you ought to go online and check it out. It's still up there. The report exposes the complicity of the TV news networks in featuring military analysts selected by the Pentagon to promote Bush's invasion and occupation of Iraq. Reg writes, the TV networks will never draw public attention to their complicity in supporting the Bush-PNAC plans for war, the illegal invasion of Iraq, and the combined occupation of a sovereign nation that never posed a threat to the people in the U.S. No way. They cannot acknowledge their role in intentionally duping the public into believing the lies prepared and disseminated directly from the Pentagon and the White House. The New York Times got their hands on Pentagon documents that repeatedly refer to the military analysts as, quote, message force multipliers, end quote, or, quote, surrogates, end quote, who would faithfully deliver administration, quote, themes and messages, end quote, to millions of Americans, quote, in the form of their own opinions, end quote. But even uglier, Reg writes, if that is possible, is a revelation that these corrupted military analysts were personally involved in helping companies win military contracts. Several of these so-called honorable soldiers held senior positions with contractors that gave them direct responsibility for winning new Pentagon business. And again, we can get enraged about this, but it's not new. Everybody knows that some of these high-ranking admirals and generals and colonels, as soon as they get out of the military, they go to work for military contractors. The degenerate ones, not the real ones, not the real military officers of flag rank who know what war really is and how vile it is. No, they don't do that. They're like the Roman general Cincinnatus. They leave and go back home and pound their swords back into plowshares. That's what they do. But not these guys. So it was all over the New York Times. General Barry McCaffrey. Well, there's no point going through all the names. The most prominent, I need to mention most prominently at the Times, was the fact that there were three officers, three generals, including General Wesley Clark, who raised questions about attacking Iraq at a key moment in September 2002. Eric Schmidt, writing in the Times, September 24, 2002, said, quote, three retired four-star American generals said today that attacking Iraq without a United Nations resolution supporting military action could limit aid from allies, energize recruiting for al-Qaeda, and undermine America's long-term diplomatic and economic interests, end quote. General John Shally Kashvili, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Wesley Clark, former Supreme NATO commander, and General Joseph Hoare, former chief of the United States Central Command, were the ones who voiced opinions against, unless I'm misreading this, against U.S. involvement in Iraq. But that's not who we saw on television that often, was it? No, the talking heads in uniform were all talking about the glorious Bush administration policies. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Because if you're not angry, then you're just stupid. You don't care. How else can you react? You know something so unfair when the man of the hour can't kick off the world in war and make them slaves to a superpower.
Underestimated the fact that we love a neighbor in need. They underestimated the compassion of our country. I think they underestimated the will and determination of the commander-in-chief, too.
Oh, yeah, you're such a guy. Colonel Ken Allard, General Wayne Downing, Lieutenant General Tom McInerney, Major General Bob Scales, General Montgomery Meigs, Major General Don Shepard. Those are just six of the names. And as the Times said yesterday, in the months after September 11th, as every network rushed to retain its own all-star squad of retired military officers, Tori Clark, you remember her? The Defense Department spokesman and her staff sensed a new opportunity. To Clark's team, the military analysts were the ultimate key influential, authoritative, most of them decorated war heroes, all reaching mass audiences. The analysts, they noted, often got more airtime than network reporters, and they were not merely explaining the capabilities of Apache helicopters. They were framing how viewers ought to interpret events. What is more, while these military analysts were in the news media, they were not of the news media. They were military men, many of them ideologically in sync with the administration's neoconservative brain trust, many of them important players in a military industry anticipating large budget increases to pay for an Iraq war. That's what we're up against. And these filthy vermin, these subhumans like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh still refer to the liberal media, and the bobbleheads out here in the flyover states all just sit there and go, yup, oh, goddamn liberal, I'd never vote for a liberal, yup, they'll take your gun, yup, stupid-ass liberal, I ain't voting for no liberal, yup, no liberal. Jesus God.
I think it's just so outrageous because, I mean, we've seen so many times this administration, this Bush crime family, over and over again, catapulting the propaganda, to quote Bush. And he got applause on that line, which is even more terrifying. But they buy Armstrong Williams to sell No Child Left Behind. They put fake news packages together and they send them to local TV stations to make them look like locally produced happy news stories about different so-called social programs. And but this is unconscionable. I mean, they get military analysts out there to hide behind their medals and their uniforms and send tens of thousands of people to death. I mean, that's the end of the road for me.
That's it, huh? That's where you get off the bus?
That's where I stop thinking of these people as even remotely connected to the human race. If they're going to put them out there specifically because they are pro-Bush, pro-military, and after, I wonder, didn't you wonder, you had to wonder, after Abu Ghraib and Gitmo scandals hit back-to-back, all of a sudden, there's just this explosion of military analysts. Where'd they come from? Mm. I hadn't seen half these people before, and I've been paying very close attention for years. And all of a sudden, here's this new crop of folks out there spinning it. Oh, I've been to Gitmo. I've been there. It's not so bad. We got the congressman talking about they get the double fruit and the French fries and the peaches on Sunday. And all of a sudden, all these people are experts on Gitmo. Oh, there's nothing going on there. Pay no attention. And they were all paid to go there. They were all sent there specifically and said, come back. Tell us good stuff. Ah!
Yeah,
I'm just sick of being lied to, aren't you? And I'm sick.
Yeah.
I really thought the military was above this, and I am really disgusted that the so-called Fourth Estate didn't vet these people better than they did.
The argument that media come back with, though, Kathy, is this argument: well, after the attack on September 11th, to question a military response was to label yourself as anti-American and unpatriotic. You know, I certainly understand. I think most of our listeners understand the trick bag that these filthy bastards put us in and how certain elements of retired military commanders turned into nothing but street whores, no offense to sex workers, for this filthy, corrupt administration. And it is sad to see. It is sad to see. It is to me anyway. To see somebody who, when they were active duty, were in positions of command and control, making decisions that had an awful lot to do with life and death issues, now become nothing but street whores, no offense to sex workers, just absolute scum.
And they all had financial, or a lot of them had financial interests,
right,
in the military-industrial complex. Here's another paragraph from the Times you ought to read. The group of the generals, the group was heavily represented by men involved in the business of helping companies win military contracts. Several held senior positions with contractors that gave them direct responsibility for winning new Pentagon business. James Marks, a retired Army general and analyst for CNN from 04 to 07, pursued military and intelligence contracts as a senior executive with McNeil Technologies. And Rumsfeld had to sign off on all these geeks, too. Each one, before they could be approved to be on this special media team. I'm just flipping over this one. This one really burned me today.
Oh, I know. It was, and I certainly understand. When I saw the headline yesterday in the New York Times, I thought, oh, Jesus, here we go. But as Reg writes at TVNewsLies.org, it's old news already. Was anybody talking about it on television news?
There's a primary tomorrow,
which is where 80% of Americans get 80% of their news. Was anybody mentioning this at all? Did any of the TV news anchors? Did anybody on CNN? Well, Wolf Blitzer did. I was watching the Situation Room, and Wolf Blitzer brought it up in the context of, well, what's your opinion of you know? And they talked about Barry McCaffrey, and they presented the statements from three generals who said, "Nah, New York Times article's a lie." You know, that wasn't me at all. And yes, it was. But good old Wolf Blitzer, who retired German U-boat commander. Oh, never mind. We'll be back after the break. We're going to take some phone calls. So if you'd like to get on board, it's 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Very quickly from Lance regarding McCain making peace, as he says, with the Vietnamese. Excuse me. I must not have made it clear, and thanks to Lance for making it clear. He writes, of course, McCain didn't make peace with the Vietnamese for what he did to them. In his small, racist, disgusting Christian mind, he, McCain, did nothing to compel himself to make peace. The old bastard made peace with the Vietnamese for their treatment of him. His countless murders of innocent people, nothing to feel sorry for. His undeserved, in his mind, imprisonment is the crime in McCain's sick, sick mind. Yeah, I'm sorry if that didn't come through, but again, thanks to Lance for clarifying it. Yeah, McCain's peace with the Vietnamese people is what they had done to him, not the mass murder and injuring and burning and disfiguring so many people. Jesus, God. All right, very quickly, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. Bridget writes, between the continuing daily economic rush toward depression and the also nearly daily nonchalant announcements of the felonies and war crimes committed by people in positions of public trust, she writes, I'm walking around shaking my head in such incredulity that I must look totally deranged, but some of the political developments of the last couple of days have my head bouncing back and forth so violently I think I'm getting a whiplash. First, McCain, of course, I strongly condemn Reverend Hagee's comments. This is what McCain said. But I respect how he runs his church. It was probably a mistake to solicit and accept his endorsement, but I'm glad I have it. Yeah, that was on, I guess that was on this week with Judas. Bridget goes on. Then there's Hillary Clinton and the vast right-wing conspiracy snuggling up in the same sack together. Hell has indeed frozen over. Richard Mellon Scaife has endorsed Hillary Clinton. Richard Mellon Scaife, who aside from his spearheading and funding the successful smearing and lynching of both Clintons in the 90s, recently engaged in such high-minded feminist-supporting behavior as putting a sign on his front lawn that read, wife and dog missing, reward for dog. That Richard Mellon Scaife has endorsed the darling of all the women who want their daughters to know they can grow up to be president. Mrs. Clinton has, of course, not repudiated nor renounced that endorsement. And then there's Obama, who's been endorsed by Michael Moore, a man who spent his life doing his best to tell the truth. Let's see, who would I want to see in the Lincoln bedroom? Hagee? Scaife? Michael Moore? No contest. Hell, I'd even prefer Jeremiah Wright. Oh, wait a minute. The Clintons already had him in the White House for spiritual advice to help him through their marital tiff. Something about a blue dress pounded to death by the denizens of Richard Mellon's cave. There goes the whiplash again. Bridget. Well, I call it the invisible whip. The invisible whip, a term that I made up after having an all-night session one time with music and bebop and drugs and alcohol with my good friend Bruce Hampton here in Atlanta probably, 30 years ago. And we were talking about the invisible whip, the cosmic lurch that will strike out when you least expect it. All right, time for some phone calls. This is Talk Radio, right? Oh, before we get cranked on the Talk Radio thing, have you become a Nova M founder yet? Time for a Malloy commercial here. Have you become a Nova M founder? I hope you have. If you have, I am deeply appreciative, as is everyone at Nova M Radio. If you have not, please consider it. Go to NovaMRadio.com and get the information by becoming a founder. And you know what? Aren't we getting close to that 5,000 mark where we're supposed to give away are we still doing that, a $10,000 drawing? We're still doing that? I think we're close to 4,000 founders. I remember when I first came to this network, we talked about that. You know, as soon as we hit 5,000, we have a drawing. Not that anybody would contribute to this network just to get the money. Write them a check, Kathy, quick. Put it in Molly's name. if you want to mail in, instead of doing it online, here's the address. All right? 824 East Washington. 824 East Washington. Is that on the website? Phoenix 85034. 824 East Washington. Phoenix 85034. That's probably on the website, on novemradio.com's website. But if you're not a founding member, please become one. It is that marriage between advertisers and supporters that is making this network successful. And I'll tell you, it's getting to the point in liberal talk radio that, I know there's still a few islands of liberal or progressive sanity out there that are preaching, the sermon. But when it comes to a network that is up and coming and not one that is ready to go into the fiery depths of hell like Air America, this is that network. So consider it. It's $100 a year, and there's all sorts of advantages to being a member. You certainly don't have to. You still can hear the programs live streaming. If you are not don't live in a city where this program is carried, you can listen on Sirius, you can listen on XM, or the internet. So the $100 a year is not to listen to the program. You can do that now. The $100 a year gets you some benefits through NovaMRadio.com, but it also declares your support of. It's the same way that I write frequently. I'll write a check for TruthOut.org simply because I use them as a resource. And like a lot of liberal or progressive organizations, they struggle for the dollars. And I get the pitch via email from Truth Out, and I'll sit down and write them a check. So if the spirit moves you, go to NovaMRadio.com and become a founding member.
And there are going to be a few added perks soon. We're going to have a brand new MikeMalloy.com website that's going to be brand new and different and exciting. Plus, we're going to have a weekly video up there. A weekly video on the Nova M site and a daily picture. And the only way Dun, dun, dun. You can access this.
Wait a minute. I must have missed this memo from the Home
Every
Office.
Every week.
A weekly video?
We're going to put up some kind of little video. Yeah. And every day we're going to have a picture that you and I get to take of whatever we want. So it's very liberating.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be fun.
Okay.
But you got to be a founding member.
Good enough.
And again, a chance to win 10 grand. I mean, hey. Can't pass that up.
Go to NovaMradio.com, Truth Seeker, and take a look. And see if you would like to do this. We'd love to have you become a founding member of Nova M Radio.
There will be no bikini shots, however, of you or me.
How about Randy? Does she have to put up a video, too?
You'll have to ask the goddess.
I'll have to check in with her. Let's call her as soon as the program's over. All right, we'll be back, and your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Of truth, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Let's go to your phone calls here. Michael is calling from the Bronx, listening on the internet. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, guy?
I'm all right.
Been a long time.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how good of music you are, but you heard of a music group called the OJs?
Yeah.
Yeah. About 35 years ago, they had a hit single called Backstabbers, and that song is ever applicable to the two biggest backstabbers in the U.S., and you know who I'm referring to, Bush and Cheney.
Yeah.
And the reason being, in giving to the Pope's visit, I thought it was just absolutely disgusting to see these two rat bastards, excuse the language, just smiling at the Pope and making, like, all good, you know, good goody-two-shoes and so forth, when the Pope has chastised both of them for their ongoing Iraq war, inhumane policies, and et cetera, before the Pope came to the U.S. Now, granted, the Pope is a man of forgiveness, of peace, and he spoke about truth, unity, everyone coming together to stop war and violence. And then here's Bush and Cheney applauding, like, they get it. And I'm like, cut the crap already, because these two guys are a bunch of backstabbers. They did the same thing to the late John Paul II. And now that Pope Benedict's back home in Rome, it's right back to the dirty business as usual. You know, whether one is religious or Catholic or not, when you look at Pope Benedict and compare him to Bush and Cheney, the average person in their right mind will have to be pretty pissed off as to how Bush and Cheney is treating the Pope like they're saying F you to him. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, it's just
I hear what you're saying, Michael, but see, I can't cut any slack for this particular Pope. First of all, I'm not very fond of religious leaders who are on the level of a Pope, say, who's supposed to be God's emissary on earth. To me, it's a bunch of hokum. How did he get to be God's emissary? Well, a bunch of other God's emissaries sat around and voted him into office. Oh, I get it. But beyond that, this Pope especially should understand and have a visceral understanding of what the government of the United States is doing. The leadership of this country is committing war crimes. And the reason Benedict, as I said earlier in the program, should know it better than the average Joe is because Benedict himself was a member of Hitler Youth. And I don't want to hear any stories from anybody about how, well, that was the thing to do. Okay, it was the thing to do. The bat squeeze, I couldn't care less. He was a member of Hitler Youth. And unless he was asleep during the Nuremberg war trials in 46 and 47 and 48, not that the trials lasted that long, but some of the verdicts lasted that long, or the appeals, being that he was conscious during that time. He's 82 years old right now, for Christ's sake. He was in his 20s. So he knows what war crimes are. He knows what the Nuremberg trials laid out as unacceptable behavior, behavior that constituted war crimes. He knows.
You're definitely right.
He knows that the Nuremberg court decided that the single most punishable, the most violent crime was the unprovoked invasion of another country. So he knows all this. And when he comes here and accepts a welcoming ceremony from these pigs, these war criminals that now run the United States, then I think the Pope displays for the world to see his hypocrisy.
I guess I see what you're saying here. I'm saying that, you know, I can preach the same things as the Pope is, but then my thing is that I'll have my eyes and ears open, and my message to people like Bush and Cheney, you know, you're going to say you agree with me and so forth and so on, but don't you dare behind my back give me some kind of crap that you're just going to defy what I'm saying and et cetera, because I would take great personal offense to that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I do, but in this game, I don't think there are any players who are playing by the rules, whether it's the Pope or Bush or Cheney or any of these people. You know, power sucks up to power. It doesn't make any difference. Don't forget, Hitler and Stalin had a non-aggression pact. So, you know, power sucks up to power,
yeah.
And I think this Pope fully understands.
I mean, I'm just like you. I mean, you know, truth seekers, yes, and our bottom line message, I think you have the same message, is don't cross the line with me because it's going to come back to you.
I hear
you. Am I right?
You're right. Michael, I got to go. Thanks a lot, man.
Have a good night, pal.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. Before the hour, this is NoVem Radio. Chris is calling from Phoenix, Arizona, listening on KVHX. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Mike. I am a founder, but I did the monthly option rather than the whole $100 at once.
Hey, well, any way you do it makes us happy as a mudlark, trust me. Thank you.
Oh, it's just a pleasure to support it. Well, you know, I wanted to say, in regards to the New York Times article you cited earlier, about the media not doing its job. Well, there's a surprise, they haven't been doing their job for years.
Uh-huh.
I think it's time that we as Americans bring back a little bit of the Weather Underground in a way and start staging sit-ins and actually, like, trying to stop people from working at our media, at our corporate media outlets. We need to start becoming serious activists and actually, you know, forcing them to pay attention and actually report news rather than infotainment. I mean, that's just, we got to do something, and that's the only thing I can think of these days. I mean, there's nothing else we can do to respond to these corporate bastards, so what do we do?
I think one of the best ways is to not watch their programs, not buy their publications. I have to say, it is mostly a television that's in the toilet and talk radio because it is so dominated by right-wingers. I still feel that there is some good journalism going on in terms of newspapers and newspaper writers.
Right, but TV media, I think we can agree.
TV is just totally...
And unfortunately, that's where most Americans, Ma and Pa American get their news, and it's just not news anymore. We have to basically walk into these places and just sit and say, we're not leaving until you actually decide to abandon infotainment, because these guys aren't going to do it. They're not going to do it willingly. They're making too much money.
Well, it's true. And one of the ways to increase the number of right-wingers on air is to, it just occurred to me, is to not watch. That's what happened to CNN. CNN has been losing the ratings game to Fox because airheads get their news from Fox Television, and thinking people don't bother with television news. So in order to get some of the airheads to increase their number of viewers, to increase their advertising dollars, as you point out, CNN, rather than doing real news, starts adopting some of the tactics and style and substance
Fox.
Of Fox.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's that bringing Tony Snow over, just like who's the punk on CNN? Glenn Beck.
Oh, yeah.
Another example of, Ted Turner is spinning in his restaurants, I'll tell you, when he has to watch his own network. Now, he said it himself that the right-wing drift of CNN is something that if he were still in control... he didn't say this directly, but having worked for the man, I can tell you he would go in there one day with a big stick and just start knocking the hell out of these people and telling them to get the hell out of his radio, out of his television network.
And
he would.
And that's the thing. And the thing is, by not watching, unless we have a Nielsen box, frankly, I mean, they're still clinging to that outmoded way of ratings. And, there's nothing we can do in that way. We really need to just go down there as a group. I mean,
They're not going to change, Chris. The best thing to do, I think, and this sounds like giving up, but it's not. But it's just to write off, like we don't communicate by stone tablets anymore. We don't get our news through the pounding of drums or smoke signals or passenger or carrier pigeons.
Oh shoot! We
now have the internet. So the thing to do is just realize that we have lost. Not that we were ever in the war. But we have lost the media war where it concerns keeping television truthful or honest or reporting some sort of journalism. It's gone, and it's never coming back. So now the idea is to develop alternative media that is no longer alternative but becomes mainstream for people with a brain. But I certainly hear what you're saying. Chris,
thanks, man.
All right. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. And speaking about CNN, when we I was going to mention this when we came back from our time off. We had put up a notice at our website that we were going to be on CNN on the morning show in a panel discussion. And I asked the supervising producer before we left, who are we going to be on with? And when he told me Neil Bortz, I said, no, absolutely not. I will simply, in the first place, I've said before that I've given up on this going on these TV talk shows, talking head things, because they just reduce down to ridiculous screaming matches and sound bites, and you have about 90 seconds. So, but the guy that called me from this Sunday morning program on CNN was a nice guy, sincere, and he said, we'd like to have you as a guest. And I said, well, who else is going to be? And I said, Neil Bortz. And I said, absolutely no. There's no way in hell I will never show up on a panel with a Nazi like Neil Bortz. I just won't do it. And he said, well, okay, I understand. And he said, well, we'll book you for the week, the Sunday that you get back. See, the Bortz show was to be the Sunday we were gone. He said, I'll book you for the Sunday. I said, okay, that'll be fine. While we're gone, we get an email from him that says, I'm afraid we're going to have to reschedule you. Well, what happened was, the reputation that I have at CNN, because unlike some other liberal or progressive talk show hosts, I come out and call them sons of bitches. And I worked there. Of all the talk show hosts in liberal talk show hosts in radio, none has ever worked at CNN. I have. And so when I call them sons of bitches and liars and talk about how they had CIA operatives working on their staff and so on and so forth, it really strikes home. I still have people at CNN who listen to this program, who listen on a manager's level, on a supervising producer level. I know because I see them. And so word gets around pretty quickly, don't put Malloy on. If you put, so the guy that called me, the producer that called me, just wasn't aware of the memo. That said, don't put Malloy on. MSNBC has the same thing, and that's fine with me. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But we got a bunch of emails from people who came. I thought you were going to be on CNN. That's the reason why. The original pairing was Bortz, and I wouldn't go to a snake killing with Bortz. Bortz is a Nazi. He has a swastika tattooed on his large ass. I would do nothing with Bortz. Nothing. Asked for the reschedule, I just said no. And then they called back and said, well, we'll put you on next time. Okay, fine. And they called back and said, oops, can't do it. And when I emailed back to the nice young man named Michael something, who had booked us, I said, slightly tongue-in-cheek, Michael, but before you invite me back again, if you ever do, you better check the in-house memos about who's allowed on your air and who isn't, because I'm on that list. You guys will take Pentagon shills like Barry McCaffrey and some of the rest of these guys, but as far as putting someone on who is just outspoken from the liberal perspective as I am, and I'm not that outspoken. I don't get on there and shout slogans but it's just irritating to CNN or MSNBC or any of these outlets to have people on what they consider to be their air. It's theirs. They bought it. They paid for it. They own it. It's their air. Who on my program constantly criticizes them. And having been a CNN staffer, that makes a lot of difference. Huh?
Well, to be fair, when Michael emailed back and said, not going to be on the 13th or the 14th. He did say, but we want to reschedule. So we haven't gotten the final guillotine.
Little clue for you?
Well, okay. I mean,
don't hold your breath.
I'm not.
To your phone calls. Wyatt is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Wyatt, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. It is an honor to talk to you, my friend.
My pleasure, Wyatt.
I cannot wait to meet you in person, to shake your hand. You are the greatest.
Uh-oh. Do we have a meeting scheduled?
I hope so. I can't wait for that moment. And one of the greatest things happened in my life in America is finding you and Randy Rhodes.
Ah, okay. Well, listen, meet Randy, all right?
And, of course, I'm talking, I honor you in a Republican way.
Where are you from, Wyatt?
I'm originally from Iran.
From Iran?
Yes, sir.
That's an interesting first name, Wyatt.
Yes, sir. It's Wyatt Earp. My first name is Wyatt Earp.
Right.
Yes, it is. Yes, sir.
That's your name?
Yes, sir, it is.
I love it.
My American passport and my California driver's license. You see Wyatt Earp as my first name.
Yeah.
And you and Randy make my day every day.
Well, that's good.
You guys energize me. I support you all the way. And you are the greatest. And I really admire you. And you are a gift to America. You are a gift to the world.
Now wait, Wyatt Earp. I just do a little radio talk show. I appreciate the fact that you listen. I really do, and I mean that sincerely, but all we do is what in a normal time in America, you would hear 10 programs like mine a day, and as it stands now, you hear maybe two or three, if that, and then you have to look for them. I appreciate the kindness in your praise, Wyatt, but trust me, there is nothing unique about this program except the point of view. You know what? Hold on a second, Wyatt. Let me put you on hold. I'll come back. We got to do a break here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Reach out and touch faith. Your own personal Jesus.
The words he had to say, he said it was a bad dream. I said, hold it, Doc, the World War passed through my brain. He said, nurse, get your pad, the boy's obviously insane. He grabbed my arm and I said, ouch, as I landed on the psychiatric couch. He said, tell me about it, your dream. Well, the whole thing started at 3 o'clock fast. It was all over by 4:15. I was down in the sewer with some little lover when I peeked out from a manhole cover wondering who turned the lights on.
It's about 9 before the hour. Yeah, you know who that is. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight, answered your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, the podcast manager. Chris in Minnesota, senior correspondent Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence, Catherine Bay is the executive producer. Back to Wyatt, who called in from Los Angeles. Let's see on KTLK. Okay, now no more praise. What did you call about, Wyatt?
Well, I just called to admire you because I can't make any comments because you are saying exactly what I want to say. And I cannot add anything to it. And you and Rachel Maddow and Randy Rhodes, you are the greatest in the world. You guys are gifted to America, gifted to the world. And I support you all the way. And please do. And at the same time, I want to say, Mike, I have about 4 girlfriends, and I'm still working to add them to. I hope they're not listening, because they don't know about each other. I'm extremely, extremely, extremely straight guy. But I support, a million percent what you are doing, and I appreciate what you are doing, and you are a gift to America, and I say it loudly. You, Rachel Maddow, and Randy Rhodes are a gift to America, a gift to the world.
Well, Wyatt, again, those are nice things to say, and I do appreciate it. I think what possibly prompts that. I'm not trying to overthink you here, but I think what probably prompts those kinds of comments about the three of us that you mentioned is the fact that so much media regarding reports on Iran or talk show garbage is really anti-Iranian, anti-Persian, and that's a shame because there's no need for that kind of madness. And while I haven't, I'm not real certain about Randy or Rachel's position on U.S. relations with Iran. I know what mine are and my positions are. But anyway, Wyatt, I hear what you're saying, and I thank you. It's very kind of you to say that. Thank you very much. Joe is calling from Brookings, Oregon, listening on KGOE. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, well, I'm starting to think what Jesse Ventura says all the time, that professional wrestling is real, and it's politics, it's fake. Now, you got Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John McCain giving speeches on Monday Night Raw tonight. That's not the best part, Mike.
No?
You're going to love this.
All right.
That fact they're going to have a mock wrestling match between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And so I guess you could say they're indirectly active participants with this type of farce. Never again do I want to hear anybody talk about, oh, we can't allow any third party or independent candidate in any debates because they're too frivolous.
It's all become just such a horrendous, hideous joke, and the joke really is on us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know what this world wrestling thing is all about. I saw something about it on Overman's program tonight. The trivialization of our political system by all the networks and probably most of the anchors, of course, it may be to the point where trivializing is what it needs, because it's become a farce and a joke, and nobody pays any attention. We treat this like it's a football contest or the Super Bowl or something. And what we're talking about is an election that will require somebody in office to undo 8, 12, 16 years of utter damage to the American economy, the American working class, the American middle class, our reputation overseas, and television treats it like a joke, which maybe it is. Maybe.
Well, I've followed politics for a long time for the entertainment value, really. I thought the major parties for the longest time is the biggest joke of all. One more thing I'd like to say, I think people should vote for the greatest American who ever lived. They should go to votenator.org. Thank you for your show, Mike.
All right. Appreciate it, Joe. Take care. Whoops, he hung up again. Joe is the fastest hanger-upper in talk radio. Steven is calling from Burbank, California, listening to KTLK. Hey, Steven.
Hi, Mike. I hope you'll be happy to know that I am now a bona fide and proud of it Nova M founder.
Thank you, sir.
And I don't even have a computer. So I went to the library and, you know, got it going and heard some stuff that was on there. But anyway, McCain is, I don't know if he said that America is a Christian nation or it should be or something, and I'm wondering what your take would be on, like, our candidates, either Obama or Hillary, quoting scripture or quoting from the Egyptian Book of the Dead or Confucius. I mean, I know that Obama can't quote from the Quran, but Hillary could, you know, and stuff like that there. So, as much as the cat is out of the bag.
Well, I hear you loud and clear, Stephen, about all these candidates, but if you are regular listener of this program, you know that I am just a full-blown atheist. I find most religions that trade in death and fear to be hysterically funny, except for the fact that they're also hysterically bloody. The religions that don't trade in death and fear, like Buddhism or Wicca, I find interesting and probably get more spiritual comfort from those than I've ever admitted. But, you know, as far as declaring this country to be a religious anything, to me is insanity. But we'll talk about it again. We're just out of time. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.